That's another attack on the Federal Reserve from President Trump. In a Fox Business interview released Tuesday, the president expressed his frustration with the nation's central bank and its leader, Jerome Powell, who he appointed last year. His criticism is the latest in his beef with the Fed, going after the central bank twice last week.
Apple on Wednesday gave users a new online tool to download all the data that exists not on their iPhones, but on the company's servers, which Apple says isn't very much. Apple's privacy portal is a new take on an old feature, allowing users to request their private data, verify their identity, and download the information all in one place.
Netflix shares bucking a lousy start to Wall Street trading Wednesday, the stock gaining ground after stellar third quarter results. The streaming media company added nearly 7 million new subscribers worldwide last quarter, which is way more than expected, and Netflix predicts it can add another 9 million subscribers in the fourth quarter. By bringing on so many new viewers, Netflix was able to easily beat profit forecasts, with quarterly sales hitting $4 billion.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's October the 18th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Here we are again with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. We're going to cover a lot of things, including the latest market information momentarily, a little bit later in the program. Nick Bork will be here from the Pew Charitable Trust. Payday loans, a way for people to maybe stretch their paycheck or pay for unexpected expenses, interest rates as high as 400%. And an Illinois law could be putting some of these installment loan borrowers at risk. We'll have a conversation about that at about 5:40 this morning. It is also Thought Leader Thursday, and Chuck Garcia is here today from Associated Bank. We'll be talking a little bit about some banking news, the Federal Reserve. Yesterday we saw the minutes from the Federal Reserve. Seems that the Fed is interested in continuing its path of raising interest rates. So we'll bring in Chuck momentarily, have our conversation with him. Let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. In the United States, futures are pointing toward opening losses later this morning on Wall Street, with futures off anywhere from 0.25% to 1/3. Dow futures are off 47 points this morning. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with the FTSE up nearly 0.25%. The DAX in Germany up about 0.5%. Markets in France up about 0.5% as well. And in Asia, lots of red on the screen this morning. The Nikkei is going to end the day down nearly 3/4, 182 points. The Hang Seng is off just a fraction. The Shanghai off about 3 percentage points. Oil is trading at $69.09 a barrel, which is down about 64 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. Facing soaring federal deficits, President Trump wants to make the government a little bit smaller. The president is asking cabinet secretaries to plot 5% budget cuts in all departments. This comes as the members of the Republican Congress say that if they win in the midterms, that they will take a look at entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, for cuts in the coming year as a way to balance the budget. Or at least bring down the deficits ballooned by the tax cut bill that the Republican has put in place over the last year. Several public funds that own shares of Facebook are backing a proposal to remove CEO Mark Zuckerberg as the company's chairman. The proposal is set to be voted on at the company's shareholder meeting in May. State treasurers from Illinois, Rhode Island, and Pennsylvania are joining with a hedge fund and New York's comptroller. In calling for the vote, they argue that Zuckerberg mishandled several scandals that have hurt the value of the company's stock. And eBay is taking Amazon to court, accusing the online retail giant of poaching third-party sellers. The lawsuit filed yesterday claims Amazon infiltrated and exploited eBay's internal member email system to pull sellers away. eBay says it's been going on for years and has sent a cease and desist order to Amazon. We begin this morning with our thought leader conversation. Chuck Garcia is the Executive Vice President and Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. Chuck, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
I should say welcome back. It's good to see you again.
As well.
Let's begin with some developing news over the last day or so. Prudential Financial is one of the last big non-bank entities to now be taken off the too-big-to-fail list. That's the end of the too-big-to-fail. At least for these non-financials.
Correct, correct.
And what is the significance of this?
Well, I think it's a rationalization, really, of probably an overreaction during the heightened crisis opinion. I think it's really good that that the regulators are looking at these entities now and determining that they don't really have a systemic risk to the financial system. They're large, but the actual payments and financial system, they really don't have an impact. And I'd have to say for Prudential and the others, it's a huge relief on the regulatory burden and the costs that are associated with sustaining and maintaining that.
I kind of went down memory lane this morning because I was trying to think what the others were. So the 2008 financial crisis trivia game this morning. Can you remember the other non-financials off the top of your head?
I'm thinking GE, AIG.
Yep. MetLife,
right.
Yeah. So those were the others. I didn't realize that. So what they did was some of these companies, all of them actually, they sort of lowered their threshold of what they were doing so that they wouldn't become that anymore. And the question I have for you is there a concern or is there a worry that this they could move back up again and this could become another problem, or have we gotten past that?
Well, you never say never, because the ecosystem of the whole financial system may change in some dynamic that we didn't expect. And so could the insurance industry or some other financial arms be impacted? Yeah, it could. I think what we know today and what we try to guard against, I would say it's unlikely. But, you know, again, the payments and the financial system can change, and some of the issues that we didn't anticipate in the last, something new could surface that they could, in fact. But I think it's a much, much lower possibility, in my opinion.
Yeah, and in talking with some of your colleagues here on Thought Leader Thursday, banks like Associated, you're really on guard against this. You have been ready to handle it.
Absolutely. You know, we're under $50 billion, so we have not had the same level of scrutiny of some of the other institutions. But nonetheless, the implications for banks our size and the cost of regulatory reporting, the stress test, et cetera, it's not insignificant. I know there's a lot of talk and the high probability of raising that, which I think, again, makes good sense given the financial environment, and especially when you look at the big four banks and the percentage of the United States deposit base that they hold. That's fair. I mean, that is such a huge impact, not just on the U.S., but the entire global economy. I think those are fair. They're strenuous. They should be. But you go below those, and the tiers drop off precipitously.
Experts say that are all pretty much in agreement that the financial crisis, if one develops again, won't be the same as the last time.
Exactly.
It'll be something new.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, you know, people are talking about student loans. You know, you can pick the topic, and they're all fair game because they're all intertwined in some way, shape, or form. And it's like anything else. You get too much of some concentration in one area. If or when it goes bad, more when it goes bad, it'll have an impact.
There has been a lot of discussion recently about the debt load of the country, rising interest rates, the debt load that even companies are carrying with rising interest rates, and the concern about how this might impact our economy. What's the fear here, and is it a real enough fear that we should pay attention to?
Well, absolutely. The rising interest rates, first you look at the U.S., okay, and the debt load we carry as a country, the costs of carrying that debt going forward are going to continue to get higher and higher. That will have an impact. Something gives, because if you're having to pay interest, some program will give or you have to tax more. So clearly that has an implication. As it relates down to companies, I'd say the vast majority of companies stockpiled a lot of cash, and they're still sitting on a lot of cash out there overall. However, when you look at long-term type investments and you're saying, do I invest in this plant? Because now a rate is basically double what it was 2 years ago. It's a different decision tree, and it's going to get higher. I think we all anticipate it continuing to grow in terms of the rate. So as you look at those long-term type of decisions and investment decisions you have to make, it's absolutely having an impact, and I think we'll continue to do so.
And you talk with some of these companies on a regular basis. What are the concrete impacts short-term of this? You're hearing that plans are changing, that sort of thing?
I think they're looking at them differently. And it's also an acceleration. Some people go, hey, if I can lock in debt today at X rate and lock it in, it's a better decision for me versus waiting two, three potentially years out when we, again, all anticipate that rising. I think the good news is there are so many strong companies. The hiring is still very, very strong. People can't hire enough talented people today. So the near term really looks at more the hiring. But when you're looking at longer term, I think today's actually a good time to look at, should I go ahead and lock in a rate today on an anticipated project 2 years from now? It's probably a pretty good time to do that. You know, I think hedging today also, hedging swaps are really good alternatives for companies too.
Are you in the camp that the Federal Reserve is going to keep raising rates, or do you think they're going to stop?
I am. I think into 19, it may not be four, maybe two, maybe three. I don't think it'll be as quick as this year, but I still think we are, when you look in historical terms, we're still at such a low historically. When you moderate it against 8 years ago, obviously it's huge. But when you look historically, we're still in a very, very low rate environment.
I know we hate to talk about politics on the Thought Leader Conversation, but the president criticizing the chairman of the Federal Reserve and the Fed, do you think that's good policy? And what's the danger there?
I don't think it is. I think, you know, forget your political affiliation. I think it's bad. It's bad to do that. The Fed is supposed to be, and I put in air quotes there, independent. It's not. It's a governmental agency, even though it's independent. But they have to look beyond the politics of the overall economy and really the worldwide economy in that sense. The U.S. is such a huge component there that we have to look beyond, you know, this quarter, this next 6 months of what is this impact for the U.S. and then the broader world economy. I think the Fed, again, this can be argued, no doubt. I think overall they do a very, very solid job.
Back to the debt from the government standpoint. Mm-hmm. At what point do we start getting, and maybe we're there now, where we, and this is part of a Brookings Institution study about how debt payments could be structured in a way that helps save us money, and they haven't been, that's not been happening. At what point does it become important to start looking at that?
Well, I think it probably did a year ago. I think we all anticipated the rise in rates that we are experiencing today. So I think when you look at situations where it's highly probable that rates are going to rise or fall, depending on which side of that curve you're on, that looking forward and trying to lock in nearer term, lower, as I was talking earlier, a lower rate today versus 18 months from now, a year from now, that's a very solid policy to utilize companies and certainly the U.S. government.
Yeah, from the government standpoint, this Brookings report said that the failure of the government to optimize maturity structure of debt cost us about $40 billion per year. And that's not chump change.
That's huge. Yeah. Yes, that's a lot of programs. That's a lot of taxes out of your in my pocket.
Yeah. Chuck, I know we've talked before about AI and how that's impacting Treasury and financial institutions. There's a new report. The 27th Annual Treasury Management Conference was held, and a report to that conference talked about how treasurers are not yet worried about AI replacing them, but they say that the significance of machine learning and AI is already significant now in banking.
It is. I think we did talk about this, and I think the thing I'm seeing, being in the treasury management world, we're still a very paper-intensive environment. And what we're seeing really begin to take hold is a lot of things that previously required an individual, a human being, keying entries, that now AI can be very, very effective at supplanting and replacing that. So it's happening today. I think the article you're referencing really is talking about the Treasury function itself. Mm-hmm. It stands to reason, because basically what the Treasury people do day in and day out is very predictive. You go in, you look at your balances. Am I short? Am I over? What do I do with that? So I think that's happening today with some of the cash forecasting models that exist in companies. But I think you're talking to a different level that hasn't yet taken hold, but it absolutely stands to reason.
Yeah, and the report suggested that Treasury operations that haven't done this yet should start small, but should start right away.
It makes sense.
Yeah. This is also Cyber October is National Cyber Security Awareness Month, and I know we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. but remind us again how to be safe with our banking.
Well, protect your passwords, stay on safe networks, Don't click on links that you don't know where they came from or where they might go to. I think that is the biggest thing for the consumer in particular. You get an email, it looks pretty reasonable, and you go ahead and click on it, and all of a sudden you're in a world that you didn't know you even entered, and you may not even know it for months or years to come. I think that's the biggest thing, is safeguard your information, safeguard your phones, your PC, but don't click on links.
Are you one of the people that would be a proponent of locking down your credit? We can now do that for free in Illinois. Freezing our credit, is that something we should do?
You know, I think it depends on what your individual situation is. I haven't heard of that specifically, but it, again, knowing what is out there and what can hurt people, I think it's certainly worth everybody looking at.
We haven't had, at least in a year, one of these big breaches. And that brings me to the next question. How dangerous is it to let your guard down on some of this stuff?
It's out there right now. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you. We just probably don't know it. And is it on a large scale? Maybe, maybe not. I had a neighbor just recently get impacted on a mortgage that he was trying to set up for his son, and he was breached because he clicked on a link that it looked pretty reasonable, and lo and behold, his money ended up elsewhere.
So no passwords, 123456.
Use characters and longer, and change them frequently too.
All right. Chuck, always good chatting with you. We'll see you next time.
You as well. Thank you.
Chuck Garcia is Executive Vice President and Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We'll continue with Chuck after the bell and post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. A new report from the Pew Charitable Trust shows major weaknesses in state laws have led to practices that obscure the true cost of small installment loans. Issue here is whether or not lenders the people being lent to are being put at more risk, and whether or not some of this stuff is fair. Let's talk a little bit about this morning with Nick Bork, who's the Director of Consumer Finance at the Pew Charitable Trust. Nick, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's begin by clarifying a couple of terms here. When we talk about installment loans, are we talking about those payday loans, or are they two separate things?
We're talking in this new report about the traditional installment loan market. So you can have payday loans that are installment loans that are paid over time, but the thing that we're talking about here and focusing on is the traditional installment loan companies, the types of loans that have been around for 50 or even 100 years. They look a lot like loans that most of us are familiar with. You borrow some money, you pay them off over several months. The difference is you don't get them from a bank, and you don't get them from a payday lender. You get them from a consumer finance company, which is a state-licensed company. And we found that it's a mixed bag. The installment loan companies are doing three things quite well, so much better than payday lenders, for example. They've got much lower prices than payday lenders. They generally have affordable payments. They generally have reasonable time to pay off these loans over several months. But there are a couple problems, too, and that's largely because of the way that the state laws are written.
The new report is called State Laws Put Installment Loan Borrowers at Risk. In Illinois, let's talk about some of the laws that might be impacting borrowers here. What's the most concerning to you?
Well, you know, in the whole spectrum of options that a consumer is looking at, you mentioned payday loans, so that's one thing they'll be looking at. Illinois has a lot of options for subprime credit. You can get payday loans in Illinois that have APRs that reach 400% and cost a lot more than other states. You can get auto title loans, which sometimes cost two or even three times the amount that the customer borrowed, and of course the customer can lose their car. In the traditional installment loan market in Illinois, you do have the normal problems there as well in that market. And the two big ones are so-called ancillary products, these things that are sold alongside the loan, and the big one is credit insurance. Credit insurance protects the lender, and it says that if the borrower dies or involuntarily becomes unemployed or disabled, then the insurance company will pay the premiums to the lender. The problem with credit insurance in a nutshell is that it's usually added into the contract. It's supposed to be voluntary, but it's usually just sort of slipped into the contract. It adds a lot to the cost and very little value to the customer. And they also add large origination fees. And as anybody who's borrowed a loan knows, even a mortgage, but even a small installment loan has fees on the front end. And in the installment loan market, these fees are usually quite large compared to the size of the loan, and companies will often encourage people to refinance the loan in order to generate more of those origination fees. So credit insurance and origination fees are two big problems in the traditional installment loan market.
Give us a sense of how we fare against other states, and I know there are other states that have actually taken steps to reform this type of lending. Ohio comes to mind. Give us a sense where we rank, and then who's working, what state is working to make it better?
You know, Ohio is a really interesting example. They recently changed their law, and they're reforming this type of lending, and they're ensuring affordable payments and lower prices, but they also focused on continuing access to credit. They wanted people with blemished credit histories or even thin credit files to have access to small amounts of loan, because it can help. But Illinois hasn't done this, so there is a lot of credit in Illinois, but it often is harmful and costs too much. Ohio's law, especially in the small dollar loan market, actually makes traditional installment loans a viable alternative to payday and auto title loans. So that's really the big story in Ohio. They reformed their entire payday, auto title, and small installment loan market. They don't have credit insurance. They do allow prices that are high enough in order for the credit to be viable. So on a small $500 type loan, you're going to see prices that are APRs rather that are quite a bit higher than credit cards. But the Lowe's loans in Ohio cost four times less than what a comparable loan in Illinois would cost. Colorado, back in 2010, did a similar thing. Other states like California have started to introduce this type of law. I haven't seen that type of reform proposed in Illinois yet.
Four times as much in Illinois compared to Ohio. That's a huge amount of money. Is there any sense in Illinois, maybe you don't know this, but among lawmakers to maybe reconsider some laws, or have you, as Pew, had made recommendations to how to fix things?
You know, I don't know the situation in Illinois. I certainly haven't read anything about it or seen a bill. In this new report, we do make some conclusions and some recommendations, and they include some things that do look like the Ohio law, so spread costs evenly over the life of the loan. That means don't have big upfront origination fees. And do something really in the traditional installment loan market to fix the problem with credit insurance. Allow transparent pricing and either eliminate credit insurance, or if it's still there, don't allow the lender to charge it all up front. A big problem with these installment loans is they'll tack on the credit insurance and then they'll charge you the full fee right up front. It's as if you had to pay, 5 years of your home insurance right at once. And the consumer is on the hook for that whole premium, and the lender adds it to the size of the loan. So then the consumer is paying interest on top of those premiums. A simple way to fix that is just make credit insurance in the space like all other insurance. In other words, the consumer pays the premium every month, and the lender doesn't get to charge interest on it. Even those two simple fixes would make Illinois' installment loan market quite a bit safer and more consumer-friendly. It's also important to maintain at the state level some pricing policies. That's because when you're talking about subprime credit, every state in the union has some kind of price limit or price control in the subprime credit market. It's important to maintain those, and it's important to calibrate them correctly. Ohio has found a good balance. Colorado found a good balance. A couple other states have found this balance. It's as I said, Illinois is charging four times more than these other states.
It seems like an issue that has been under the radar, that hasn't been out front and center. I know we often hear a lot about those payday loans, but this seems like it hasn't been getting the attention it should be getting.
That's a good point, and that's why we looked at this market. Amazingly, there isn't really a good scan of what this traditional installment loan market looks like. We found that about 10 million people throughout the country are spending about $10 billion on these traditional installment loans. There are about 14,000 stores in the United States, in 44 states, and in Illinois there are 360 or so stores spread evenly all throughout the state. So this is an urban issue, a suburban issue, and a rural issue. And the loans range from $100 to several thousand dollars. But nobody's really got a good feel for what that market looks like until now, and I hope that the people will dig into it more. Overall, the subprime credit market in this country is very large. If you look at payday loans, installment loans, you think about pawn, you think about rent-to-own, you think about overdraft at banks. People are using all kinds of subprime credit, and I think that's why it's important to start shifting the conversation to how can we make these loans of better quality so that they really help people and save them money. And that's not just good for the individual or the family, but it pumps a lot of money back into the community so people can be buying at local businesses and just being more productive members of the community. Things like payday loans are just draining people's pockets and not really helping them much. There's definitely a way to do it better.
Is there some concern here just in general about the amount of borrowing that's happening at some of these places in regards to the larger situation with the economy? Does this suggest that there is some sort of weakness with people's wages? I know we've seen that over this expansion. Is this a symptom of that?
In part, yes. You know, I think a lot about why people go and use something like a high-cost installment loan or a high-rate installment loan. A big part of the story there is that there are a shocking number of people in this country who are living paycheck to paycheck. A lot of people are what researchers would call income volatile, meaning their income is shifting up or down by more than 25% from month to month. And, you know, think about somebody working retail or working at a factory on an hourly wage basis. Their hours are changing a lot from pay period to pay period. You might get 25 hours this time and 45 the next. That creates these gaps of several hundred dollars. Now, what's the best way to deal with that? People could easily argue, you know, smooth people's wages, give people higher wages. But part of the solution here is to allow safe, reasonable, fairly priced small installment loans. And this installment loan market can be part of that solution, but I think if the laws get a little bit better, like we've seen in Ohio and elsewhere, we can improve the situation for individuals and help the community generally be more financially sound.
Nick, good information this morning. We appreciate you being here with us to talk about it.
Thank you for your time.
Nick Bork, who's a director of consumers finance at the Pew Charitable Trust, will link out to the report, State Laws Put Installment Loan Borrowers at Risk, in the podcast of our conversation a little bit later on this morning at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures off about 0.25% on the Dow heading to the opening bell later this morning. The S&P and NASDAQ futures off about a third. Let's get an update on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday's trade in the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade, a red screen, with the December wheat contract down 7 cents, the December corn contract down a penny and a half, and the November soybean crop contract down 0.75 cents. Turning to the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange, lean hog futures dropped for a second straight session today on technical selling, and after government data showed heavier weighed hogs coming to market, pointing to larger supplies. And so a red screen for the livestock futures as well. The February lean hog contract down $1.80 a hundredweight. The December live cattle contract down 20 cents. And the November feeder cattle contract down 72 cents a hundredweight. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple more stories before we leave you this morning. British Prime Minister Theresa May says she's considering a European Union proposal that would keep Britain bound to the bloc's rules for more than 2 years after Brexit. At present, the two sides say Britain will remain subject to the bloc's rules from Brexit day on March 29th until December 2020 to give time for new trade relations to be set up. With divorce talks stuck in neutral, the bloc has suggested extending that period to give more time for a trade deal that ensures a frictionless border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. France's finance minister is the latest high-level official or executive to cancel his attendance at an upcoming investment conference in Saudi Arabia amid doubts over the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Several top business executives have canceled their attendance, as has the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Thursday, October the 18th. On the calendar today, initial jobless claims coming, Philadelphia's Fed Business Outlook Survey, leading indicators, the EIA Natural Gas Report, a couple of Fed speakers out there as well, including James Bullard. On the earnings calendar today, American Express, Blackstone, Bank of New York, E-Trade, and PayPal. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, October the 18th.